This is Connected to Chicago, a look at the top stories of the week with the people making, covering, and talking about the news of the day. Now, Connected to Chicago.
And welcome to Connected to Chicago. Our guest this week is John Jackson, professor at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. He's been covering politics for over four decades. And I should say, we're recording this ahead of when the new congressional map is released, at least the first version of it, by Democrats in Springfield. Let's get right into it, Mr. Jackson. Essentially, we know in Illinois, whoever controls, has a majority party, pretty much controls the map. My understanding is the maps were drawn in May without the full census data, signed into law by the governor in June. So what's this revisiting for? What is happening right now?
Well, that you mentioned is a result of the administration, the last administration, having problems because of COVID, getting the census data out and getting the census completed, for that matter. And some would say, the critics would say, they were dragging their feet on purpose. And that, of course, caused the U.S. Census data to be late. And what they used was called the American Community Survey, which is a survey. And so the survey data are not the official data and not as reliable, as it turned out. So they had to do it over again. And at least on the congressional district maps, I think they unveiled those on August 30th and passed them on the 31st.
When it comes to the redistricting process, redrawing of the maps, why is it, I guess my question would be, why is it important in terms of having control when it comes between Republicans and Democrats? They essentially can squeeze people out of their own district, right?
Yes, and the stakes are great, both at the state level and at the federal level. The incumbents get particularly nervous at this time because they don't like to get new people. They don't like to be drawn into a district where they only have partial support currently. And basically, the incumbents won't take care of incumbents first. Not only that, the parties get involved because they want to get as advantageous a draw of the district as they can possibly get. We've got national pressure coming from the Democrats at the DNC level, hoping they can use Illinois to pick up at least one seat because they're going to be drastically disadvantaged by the partisan gerrymandering in the Republican-controlled states. And there are a lot more Republican-controlled states than there are Democratic-controlled. So the hope out of Washington is that the Democrats will get a map that produces at least one pickup. I think that's unlikely, frankly, and I can talk about what I think is the more likely on the congressional district level, if you would like.
Yes. Yeah. Please explain.
Well, the current is 13 Democrats and 5 Republicans. I think the most probable result would be 13 Democrats and 4 Republicans. In other words, they would protect all the current Democratic incumbents, and they would force the Republicans to lose the one that we've got to give up. And that one's almost certainly going to have to be given up in downstate, in central and southern Illinois, especially, most notably because that's where the population losses have been the greatest. There is some hope, I think. I've not seen the new map, which I think is yet to be unveiled, but Democrats, at least some of them, would like to get greedy and push the Republicans down to 3 and the Democrats up to 14, but I think that's optimistic at best.
Well, who's on the chopping block, do you think? I've heard both names mentioned, Adam Kinzinger and Rodney Davis. Do those districts, one look better than the other when it comes to the chances that the Dems would redraw things and take that over?
Well, I think those are possibilities, but I think the mixture of who's on the chopping block is, in this end of the state, Davis and Miller and Voss. That's the 12th, 13th, and 15th. Kinzinger is kind of a special case, and I'm not sure how that will turn out and how the Democrats might regard his district. But I think down here, Davis, Miller, and Voss are likely to become two of those, and that means however they advantage that resultant two that come from those three. And that's where I think the loss is most likely, although the Kinzinger district could easily be chopped up because he's one of those marginal districts.
How does race play into the way they shape these districts?
Well, it makes a major difference because it has to comport with the 1965 Civil Rights Act. And that means you have to draw districts that give advantage, meaning usually 50% or above. If it's a predominantly Latino area, for example, or predominantly Black district, and there you get something of a conflict between the African-American incumbents and those who have aspirations for picking up more Latino districts, whether we're talking state legislature or Congress. So there's talk about maybe two congressional Latino possibilities, but that has to come out of either some of the white areas around Chicago, Quigley District, for example, or Black districts currently. So you get some cross-minority community conflict there.
But so there's no way to get around that. It seems like they can redraw the map however they want. So, I guess they don't have to create another Latino district if they don't want to, right?
Exactly. They could leave it at one, which is currently Garcia, of course. And that may be what they do. That's kind of the easiest way out because you're only dealing with one incumbent there.
And that, I mean, there's talk, too, that Lauren Underwood could see some shift. Talk about that.
Well, the two Democratic districts that are really not Democratic districts in the usual sense, they are marginal districts, competitive districts. Look at Lauren Underwood's outcome last time. She was pressed to the wall to keep that district. And so that's clearly a competitive district. And the other outstate or downstate district is Boustros. Hers is clearly a competitive district. And if she were running again, it would be less competitive. But the fact that she's announced her retirement makes it an even more competitive district. So that's why I'm saying that Democrats will do well to come out with their current 13 and make the Republicans take a minus to cover our loss of one.
How important, I mean, I understand that downstate, you think that's where a Republican is a seat is going to be lost there.
Yes.
Now, when we talk about closer to Chicago and the collar counties, to be once upon a time that a lot of those collar counties were red, a lot of them have gone purple. McHenry County is kind of the last red county, but it seems like it's slowly turning purple. How important is it with keeping in mind those collar counties when doing these types of remaps?
Well, it's huge. And the shift of the two parties is easily demonstrated by what you're intimated. That is, Southern Illinois used to be all the way up through Metro East St. Louis area, a bastion of the backbone of the downstate Democratic Party, which helped out because Cook County and Chicago, of course, were the backbone up on your end. But nevertheless, all that's changed. Democrats are now competitive all over, don't win like J.B. Pritzker and Joe Biden in McHenry. But otherwise, all of those collar counties have been routinely going Democratic in nationally influenced elections. And I want to emphasize this will be an absolutely nationalized election. It'll be about Joe Biden and his record, the Republicans going after him hammer and tong, and the Democrats defending. Joe Biden's current job approval has dropped below 50. He will need to be above 50 to be helpful at, you know, in effect at the top of the ticket. And that's why I'm saying this is going to be a tough battle for the Democrats. All of those things that are important, like what does the economy look like? What does the unemployment rate look like? What does the inflation rate look like? Will be major factors in whether or not Democrats can even expect to win those competitive districts like the Boustros district and the Underwood district.
We're talking with John Jackson, a professor at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. And Professor, State Rep Tim Butler, Republican down in the Springfield area, came out this week. He is alleging that Democrats are meeting secretly about these maps. Well, if the Republicans were in charge, I'm sure the Democrats would be saying the same thing. It is a very political process. How involved are the Republicans in redrawing these maps? Is the governor shutting them out completely, or is he talking with them? Does he bring them in and ask what they think?
Well, it's not so much the governor, but the leadership of the House and the Senate, and the governor's got a person at that table too. But it's really more the legislative process, and they're doing what all parties do, and every other state as well as here. They're meeting with staffers who are highly intelligent about where these lines intersect with the census data. They've got tremendous big data that show down to the precinct level past voting stages, and all parties meet in secret to study that stuff at the staff level, and it's highly sophisticated. That part of it is clearly a science, but there's also art to trying to draw these districts along the lines we were just expecting. And the Republicans undoubtedly have staff members who've done the same thing, trying to anticipate what the Democrats are doing. But yeah, I'm sure the Democrats have cut the Republicans out, and in the states where the Republicans control, they're doing the same thing. In short, it's a very partisan process, and the Supreme Court so far has refused to take partisanship out of it. They've had several cases where the plaintiffs wanted to go to a more neutral commission approach with just the data driving the decisions, and the Supreme Court has never basically endorsed that view. That's the Supreme Court of the United States.
Well, I guess the whole fair map question, right? Maybe a computer could do this based on the numbers. You have a nonpartisan or at least a full bipartisan group to do this, or even non-politicians do it. What would the advantages be to having something like that? Or are there any disadvantages to having a fair map, knowing that each congressional district kind of has their own needs and wants? And isn't that what a congressman is for, is to know what his people in his district need?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You can do it in a much more objective fashion, if objective means you feed the data in and you don't look at where the incumbents are currently, and computers can be told to do that. Commissions. But nevertheless, you're always going to have some judgment calls, particularly if you still follow the 19th Rights Act. You're going to have to make some judgment calls. You could draw a map that is more compact for each of the districts. They have to be both compact and contiguous. They're always contiguous. They're rarely very compact in Illinois because of the irregular shape that we are. The model is Iowa, but Iowa is shaped like a loaf of bread. Illinois has got these rough, irregular borders and shape, and there's always going to be at least some rough-looking districts that result from that, even if you just let the computers and some staff person do it, as they mostly do in Iowa, for example.
Professor Jackson, my thanks to you for being on the program today.
Well, thanks for having me, and anytime I can help, you just give me a call. Glad to talk to an SIU graduate.
We'll probably check in with you again after this whole thing is said and done. We got a map up on the wall.
All right, great. Bye-bye.
Up next, the Reporter Roundtable. You're listening to Connected to Chicago on WLS.
This is Connected to Chicago. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.
Now it's time for the Reporter Roundtable, where we welcome in Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business, Lynn Sweet, the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for the Sun-Times, Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, and political reporter Mary Ann Ahern of NBC5 Chicago. Well, guys, let's get right into it. Greg, let's start with you, because I know you have got to go and write your stories. The big news today, the remap. It looks like Republicans not only lose a seat to the census, but will probably lose a seat overall, right?
Well, at least that's the Democratic intention. They've essentially dismembered Adam Kinzinger's district, breaking it up and putting his house apparently in the same district as Marie Newman, the Democratic incumbent, the district is from her than him. They've also taken Rodney Davis's district and morphed it into a snaky, a circuitous thing that runs from Metro East all the way up to Peoria. That supposedly is tilting Democrat, we'll see. They've also only kept one Latino district, despite some pressure to the contrary. That's the bottom line.
Lynn Sweet, your take on this map. It looks rather odd, I guess, as we would expect.
Well, this is a Democratic-drawn map, and yes, when you look at the odd shapes, that's why the word gerrymander was invented. What's going on in Illinois should be noted that Illinois and New York and Maryland and New Mexico are just a handful of states where Democrats control the map-making process. Some maps have a commission, but most of the states are going to have maps that will be gerrymandered by Republican legislatures. But the thing to look at here is a court challenge that almost inevitably will come up. Then we look at whether or not Adam Kinzinger and Rodney Davis decide to run for Senate or governor. And then we have to kind of evaluate. It looks like the Democrats didn't make these districts as Democratic as they could have been, which may mean that some of these districts, like the Newman district, may be a little more swingy than you would have thought, as long as they had the ability to draw the lines.
Mary Ann, your thoughts on this?
That's exactly. Lynn, I thought by pairing Kinzinger with Marie Newman that this is going to be a true test of that district because, of course, Newman was not a Mike Madigan favorite. He supported Lipinski, was not exactly thrilled when he lost. And Mike Kinzinger survive a match with Newman. I don't know if this
Mary
is
Ann,
bad news.
Before we get to that, the more
I get it. I get it.
Can he survive a Republican primary in any district that we see on this map? What do you think?
Excellent. Yeah, true. I am jumping ahead. I am truly jumping ahead. If he survives and does face Newman, that would be quite a contest.
Yes.
Ray Long, care to weigh in there?
Well, you know, you also have to wonder if somebody might come out of the woodwork and challenge Newman in this too. But I think that just as was expressed by my fellow colleagues here, I am surprised that it is not more Democratic in this particular district. And I am slightly surprised they didn't try to push the Republican map down to only two likely seats rather than three. They could have maybe done that. And I'm sure that the federal congressional political folks on the Democratic side were pushing for that because, you know, the ultimate reason this is all important is because this kind of pickup now could help counter Republicans in other states who are trying to tilt their map Republican and ultimately decide whether or not Nancy Pelosi can retain the speakership in D.C.
Lynn, I talked with John Jackson. He's a professor down at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. And he seemed to think that the in his words, the Democrats weren't going to be as greedy and was going to leave it at, I believe he thought that he was going to leave it at 15-4. But I guess the question is, why wasn't Newman, who's an incumbent, why wasn't she protected more?
Well, she still has a district that, so why? The answer is, I don't have a good answer for that. She still has a district that is probably up by 8 Democratic. The real thing that, so more than that, I think another question is, why didn't Brad Schneider and Mike Quigley and Jan Schakowsky, why didn't they get pushed a little west to give some relief to some of the Democrats in the collar counties that may, you know, and pick up some more of their Republican area? I thought Lauren Underwood would have gotten a district more. I mean, it's a better district. She gets, she goes, I think, from a Democratic up by 4 to Democratic 8 or so. But I would have thought, given her territory, I thought some of her northern turf would have been a lot more. So, you know, Quigley, Schakowsky, and Schneider. Schneider now gets all of Lake County, but that's kind of a minor pick, minor revision for him. So I will find out in coming days, I guess, some of the thoughts as to what's going on. The key thing, and I haven't been able to do this yet, maybe you have, is to see how many Chicago precincts are still in the district, because that is key. Remember, even though the map looks good when you're looking at real estate, it's not as densely populated as the Chicago precincts. So keep that in mind before before we finish this analysis here.
I think.
Wait. One more big thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Illinois, you don't have to live in your district to run. So Kinzinger could say, if he could look things over and say, if I'm going to have a primary, I may go run in Caston's district or Foster or wherever he wants, or not at all.
Interesting.
And we should note that despite Latinos and activists being quite outspoken about the maps, they did not get a second Latino majority district. There is still only one.
And that's probably not going to sit well with them, right? Going forward here, are they going to be part of perhaps a challenge?
Well, they are already part of the state challenge, but as whether or not they challenge this congressional map is yet to be seen.
Right. And remember, these are the issue with the Hispanic population that has increased unquestionably. It just hasn't increased enough in specific areas to make a district. I know there was there is some thought, there was a presentation to one of the hearings where you could do it. But when you look at voting age population, that's how they do the maps. It's not just everybody. When you look at the map, voting age population, that means people who could vote, who are of a certain age, you have a little different bit of a snapshot. And it was hard enough to make the one congressional district we have. It's called the Earmuff District because it connects Latino communities on the north and south sides of Chicago.
Hey, Ray, you've got a pulse on downstate a bit. The La Hood-Miller race, I guess, is what that's going to shape up to be. Any thoughts on that?
Well, clearly Darren LaHood has name recognition in a lot of the district that he's been put together, but they're trying to see whether they can take out either LaHood, who has some rising stature in Congress, or to knock out Miller, who is conceived or rather perceived as somebody who is a little too far out there on the right to be a true voice of that could be even possibly pulled together for some real compromises along the way.
Lynn, I think I read in the Sun-Times a story that had maybe thought that Lauren Underwood could have a little bit of trouble. I guess under this map, is she affected at all?
Oh yeah, no, it's a better, it's a much improved, it is a much improved map for her. Pardon me. It takes out some Republican turf on the northern part and gives her some more Democratic turf on it. I just thought it could have been made even better.
I guess, you know, we talk about the collar counties and how important those are as far as population. And a lot of them were red at one time. They've turned purple or blue. Really, McHenry County seems to be the only one that's kind of red still. So, Lynn, like, how important are those collar counties overall here when we talk about, I guess, the impacts that those counties have on?
Well, we know already that the collar counties in Illinois have been getting more Democratic. That's why we have Sean Casten in his second term, Bill Foster repeatedly reelected. That's why even though Lauren Underwood had a squeaker of a win that she won, because the collars are turning more Democratic. A issue, you know, when Republicans will say this is so, you know, and they will complain, but the reason that they had to, they have such big districts when you look at the map, is that they suffered population loss in the downstate part of Illinois. So the districts have to have about the same number of people in them. That's just how the system works. So some of this is dictated by population. And when you do a kind of a gerrymandered map like this, you have software that can really just track voting histories and people in precincts. So that's why, if our listeners wonder, why does this look so weird? It's because the voting files of people, not by name, are loaded into the software. And, yeah, you could determine where around the college towns. And, you know, if you look at that Rodney Davis snake-like district, it's to include college towns in it that are overwhelmingly Democratic.
Well, the electronic thing is just so amazing now, because you can precisely draw around people's houses and cut them in and out. I mean, that's been going on for years, and it's kept getting more sophisticated over the years, too. So you can really shape these things. And that really brings me back to the question, why didn't they just go for it all and try to make it only two Republicans in districts that are likely to go their way? Maybe you folks have a theory on that.
Well, my only theory is if they went too far, they're going to have a court challenge anyway. And if they went that far, it would make a map even harder to defend. And one thing, these are proposed maps, and we know in the legislative maps when they had hearings, they did change some stuff in it. But it, you know, there were no stakes. There were no political states in the Illinois General Assembly maps. It was always going to be Democratic chambers. You would have disputes as to if you needed more Hispanic districts or not. There was no national story here. The stakes are so high in getting this map passed and legal, because it could decide what party controls the House after the 2022 election, that if they were too greedy, it would have just made a court case easier. And what you don't want is to have a judge end up doing the map, as we did in, 20 years ago, I think? It might have been. I think a judge. 20, 30,
that,
I forget.
The thing that strikes me, though, is that a couple of years ago, Chief Justice Roberts even wrote in an opinion in a 5-4 decision in the U.S. Supreme Court that basically, you know, limited how much the courts would get involved in these things. Now, that's one where he had said that federal judges have no license to reallocate political power between the two major political parties with no plausible grant of authority in the Constitution. And Elena Kagan, of course, dissented and said that the majority ruling actually meant that state officials' intent to entrench their party in power is perfectly permissible, even when it's the predominant factor in drawing district lines. But as she noted, she thought that was wrong.
I guess my question then for... I'll go start with you, Marianne. As it's just a regular voter here, I'm looking at this map and I'm thinking, geez, this really looks like a bowl of spaghetti here in some areas. Maybe it's time to have a computer draw up this map. Keep the politicians out of it. You think that argument's going to come back?
Oh, of course it will. I mean, that's what, you know, most of us would say just by first blush of seeing it. But guess what? If the Republicans were in charge, they would probably do the very same. It's unfortunate that that's the way that it goes. But the party in power gets to draw the line. And I think Lynn is absolutely right. If they've gotten way greedy, they were greedy enough, but if they were over the top greedy, it would only give more fuel to the fire in the court cases that have been filed.
And also, may I point out, we have had movements funded by millions of dollars in Illinois to create a mapping commission or some other scheme to take the map making away from the legislature, but it failed. It failed for a few reasons, and one of them, by the way, why would an unelected commission of people necessarily do better than this? I also want to point out that if you look at the current map of Illinois, it looks like a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's not like this map is all that different. I think the most the remarkable looking district is the snake-like the snake that goes through central and southern Illinois, because it is the most obvious cartography made for a political reason.
Yeah, I mean, there was one in the state drawn like that 20 years ago where a state representative named Judy Kaler at the time was put into a district that was like 120 miles long and only about 6 miles wide. And the Illinois courts actually, instead of cutting a sliver down the middle of it, cut it vertically instead, and kind of tried to correct the injustices there in that drawing. But you know, one of the things that also strikes me about this is this type of effort to try to take the politics out. It's exactly what then President Barack Obama was talking about when he went to Springfield a few years ago after he was president.
Yes.
He said, you wonder why Congress doesn't work. Well, they have all these people here, the House of Representatives. They may have a handful, less than 10% of the districts that are even competitive. And what ends up happening is that you get candidates who appeal to the hard right and hard left, and you're missing some of the people in the middle. And so the debates overall on policy move away from the middle, and most Americans are not on the far ends of the spectrum, but the results of the maps contribute to the polarization overall.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So once Obama left office, he joined up with Eric Holder, who was his attorney general, and they run an organization that's, you know, raises heck about Republican gerrymandered remaps. Let's see if they raise a peep about this one.
Absolutely. It fits into the same pattern. And
yeah.
It's kind of like disarming if one person says they want campaign contribution limits. They're not going to disarm if the other guy is not going to disarm.
Right.
So
which is absolutely, which is why there's never a good year, but you have to have everybody disarm at the same time. Otherwise, why would we, if I were a Democrat, I would say, you know, I live in the real world, and it's more important to have a Democratic-controlled House, so we're going to do what it takes.
Right, right.
What are the next steps then, Lynn? They're calling this like their first draft, right?
Yes.
Do we think there's going to be changes? If yes,
yeah,
where does it go? If no, where does it go?
Okay, so next week there are a few public hearings. There might be some changes, and I think it would be among Democrats who want to make their districts better. It's not going to do. I am predicting that whatever is the outcome, and there will be revisions, it won't be to make things better for Republicans. It will be to make things better for Democrats. So just as you've been raising the question, why wasn't Newman's district better or Lawrence district better? Maybe they're asking the same questions. So anyway, there's going to be, let's say, some revisions, and I expect to vote on this by the last week of October, and Pritzker to sign it, court challenges to come.
Marianne, is this the biggest thing? This comes up then in the veto session, right? Is this the biggest thing on their plate down there, or are there some other things?
As far, and Ray, you probably would know more, as I've been so immersed in the mayor and the city, but this is certainly top of mind, and people have been waiting and waiting to see what this congressional map would look like. And now finally today we do see it. So yes, this will be one of the top priorities.
Ray?
Yeah, there's going to be some discussion about maybe some kind of new parental notification limits that would be put on the Illinois law that requires parental notification on abortion. But the congressional maps could help tilt the balance one way or another for the United States. And remap is the political fight that is the biggest one every 10 years, and it affects everything for the next 10 years.
Marianne, well, I got you. Speaking of city council and the mayor and FOP President John Catanzara, the mayor has now shot back, I guess, going to a judge. What did the mayor do here today, Friday, as we're taping this?
Yes, the mayor has gone to the courts to say that John Catanzara is, in her words, inciting a strike. She's filed for an injunction against the FOP, asking to block police officers from engaging in any kind of work stoppage or strike. The FOP responded immediately and said no. They filed their own and said that we're not doing that. The mayor has forced us into this. So we are expecting some kind of hearing, perhaps as we're taping now, to happen even yet this afternoon. It's gotten to that point. You know, no one thought it would really get there, but it has, to call the courts in to make a decision. I find it somewhat interesting, such a different tone with police, fire, and anyone really that's deciding against the vaccination, when the new CPS CEO, Pedro Martinez, when he was asked this week, all right, are you going to lock people out? Are you going to not pay them? Oh, no. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk to them. We're going to work this out. Perhaps they need some more explanation. Maybe they need to talk to more people to understand why the vaccines are important. Whole different tone with police from the mayor's office than it is with CPS and CPS staff.
And we're going to have to leave it there. My thanks to Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, Lynn Sweet, Bureau Chief there in Washington, D.C. for the Chicago Sun-Times, Greg Hines at Crane's Chicago Business, and Mary Ann Ahern, political reporter of NBC5 Chicago. Up next, Lauren Cohn. You're listening to Connected to Chicago on WLS.
This is Connected to Chicago, a look at the top stories of the week with the people making, covering, and talking about the news of the day. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.
I'm Lauren Cohn for Connected to Chicago. The fentanyl crisis is becoming a real threat in Chicago. And joining me is Robert Bell, special agent in charge of the Chicago Field Division of the DEA. Thanks for being with me.
Glad to be here, and thanks for covering this important information.
How bad is the fentanyl crisis in Chicago?
Well, it's bad because it's costing lots of lives across Chicagoland and nationally, and that's why the DEA recently issued a public safety alert and then launched the One Pill Can Kill campaign to warn Americans and those around Chicagoland about the dangers of fentanyl, but specifically the dangers of counterfeit illegal pills that are made to look like prescription pills that contain oftentimes lethal doses of fentanyl.
What are those pills disguised as, and who's most at risk?
They're often disguised as oxycodone M30 pills that would, if they were legitimate, would be made by pharmaceutical companies, and there would be quality controls and the dosages would be controlled. But the problem is that these pills are manufactured clandestinely and illegally in huge batches in clandestine laboratories in Mexico in multiple hundred pound or multiple thousand pound batches. And those the ingredients for that fentanyl is usually provided by Chinese organizations. The precursor chemicals are provided by China to the Mexico cartels.
And so it's just been a growing problem. Who is most at risk? Is it young people that are targeted?
we're very concerned about the young people, but for that matter, we're concerned about all Americans, because the fentanyl and opioid crisis really knows no bounds in terms of demography, ethnicity, gender, or geographics. But anyone who has a mobile phone has access or can be reached by someone trying to market these pills. That might mean over Facebook Marketplace, WhatsApp, Snapchat, the dark net, or even the open web.
Obviously, there's been a change in the border under this new president, under President Biden. Do you feel that the crisis that we're seeing at the border is a contributing factor to the rise in fentanyl problems?
Well, there's just so much money at stake, and greed is the driving factor for these Mexico-based drug cartels like the Sinaloa cartel or the New Generation cartel. So they're moving these drugs, manufacturing them, and moving them across the border to the U.S. markets any way they can. And that includes the border, ports, the mail, tractor trailers, traditional passenger vehicles, and more.
You know,
I do want to say what's so concerning is that in 2017, only about 1 in 10 of these pills contained a potentially lethal dose of fentanyl. In 2019, that number rose to 1 in 4, or 25%. And in 2020, about 2 in 5, or 40% of counterfeit pills that are analyzed by DEA labs contained a potentially lethal dose. So that's why we're so concerned. That and, of course, the rising overdose death rate. Back in 2020, a record number of Americans died of drug overdoses, that number being about 93,000, which is very concerning.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, there's been so much paying attention to the pandemic and COVID-19, but these other issues plague our country. And this has just been growing on the side all along. A lot for the American public to take in to worry about this as well, but we have to.
Well, we certainly do. And a little bit closer to home here in Illinois in 2020, about 2,500 of our residents died of overdoses as a result of fentanyl and other opioids. And in Cook County alone, that number was about 1,400 residents that died of drug overdoses resulting from taking opioids, including fentanyl. So very, very concerning. And I would point out, too, that in fiscal year 2020, which started October 1 of last year, our DEA agents here in the Chicago Division seized about 600 pounds of fentanyl pills, or I should say 600 pounds of fentanyl powder that includes pills. And that would be theoretically enough fentanyl to kill about 40% of the U.S. population. And just think about that.
Wow, that's just unbelievable. Well, thank you for the work you're doing in the public campaign, and we'll help get the word out there to educate everybody as best as we can. Special Agent Robert Bell, thank you once again, and I'm Lauren Cohn for Connected to Chicago.
And that'll do it for this week's Connected to Chicago. My thanks to Matt Mellon for his technical assistance. I'm Nick Gale, 890 WLS News.
Connected to Chicago, a production of WLS News. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.